Hey, not too bad. How are you, man?
Doing good.
That's good. So where are you located at? What's the weather like up there?
Well, we're in Ithaca. It's cold, but it's sunny.
Yeah, I'm in Cattaraugus now, and it's cold. The ground's still frozen and shit, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So, all right, Scott, tell me about when you first decided you wanted to be in music and what bands really touched you or influenced you, so to speak.
Well, I'm probably going back to, the mid, later 80s with that. I got into punk rock probably in, 84, 85. I started listening to stuff, and the bands that really, really spoke to me right off the bat were the Dead Kennedys.
Oh, yeah.
Black Flag was a big influence. The Circle Jerks. And, you know, I remember seeing a video for the Dead Kennedys one time on this show they used to have called USA Up All Night. And it was this really cool, live video interspersed with, scenes from the shit that was going on in Cambodia at the time. And it really affected me, and it really just was something that I felt like I wanted to be part of. As far as getting into music goes, after, you know, when I graduated high school, I went in the Army for 4 years.
Yeah.
And down in D.C., you know, I was part of the punk scene down there, which was awesome. And when I got back out of the Army, went back to Syracuse, that's when I started getting into bands. My first foray into music was with death metal, actually. I was in a death metal band called Violent Fury, and then another one called Demonophile. And those were both, you know, a year or two in, and then, you know, things happened. But yeah, that was my first foray into actual music, was death metal.
Were you on vocals back then, or were you playing guitar, or?
No, I've always been on vocals.
Nice.
Yeah.
So that's kind of funny, because I saw you guys live, and I guess I could see you doing death metal growls, but.
Yeah, it was something that, you know, it actually came kind of naturally to me. You know, when death metal first started coming out, I was really into that, too. I just liked, you know, heavy, fast, driving music, and it really spoke to me. And, you know, it was funny because it's a lot harder to sing, punk rock, hardcore style than it is to sing death metal, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of those things, it's like this breath control thing, you know.
Oh, yeah, I was able to develop a growling type of vocal myself, a la Chris Barnes, you know.
Nice.
And, you know, a little later on, I started getting into punk, and I'm like, oh, all I got to do is fucking yell? No, it's a bit more than that. By the time I got it right, I had moved on to, I love punk, and I always have. I grew up a metalhead, though, before, but punk influenced me about 13 or 14 years old when I got the first Sex Pistols album and the Misfits collections.
Nice.
But, I always tell people, it influenced me as much as heavy metal did, but I find that punk can actually be more angry and intense than some of the metal, because...
Absolutely.
I mean, metal's always known for some kind of intricacy somewhere, whereas punk, you could just let your fucking raw fucking aggression just go. You know?
Absolutely.
So you were influenced by, Black Flag and the hardcore bands. Are you into more of the classic or older school punk bands from, the first waves in America and England as well?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I've found that there's pretty much no part of punk rock that I don't like in some way, shape, or form. You know, going back to the early stuff, you know, Ramones and Sex Pistols, and, you know, the early British bands, fucking Coxbar and shit like that.
Oh, yeah, Coxbar.
Those things were amazing. Yeah, absolutely amazing. I love that stuff.
Oh, yeah, Sham 69 was another good one from that era, too.
Absolutely. Yeah, Sham 69's great.
It's crazy, though, too, because a lot like the grunge movement, the whole punk thing, you guys, no one band sounds alike.
Right.
You know, and that's what I've always liked within that genre.
That's the thing, too, man, is, you know, Jello and a lot of the, you know, forerunners and spokesmen of punk rock always said, you know, it doesn't have to all sound the same. You can do what you want, and, you know, that in itself is punk rock. You know,
yeah,
I mean, just do your thing.
Well, if you look at the show that we were at, you look at the crowd, there were a few who were in the stereotypical punk garb, but for the most part, it was everybody else, just dressed in whatever.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. It's like, you don't need labels, you don't need to wear a uniform. You know, you just do your thing, you know. Some of the most punk rock people I've met in my life didn't look like it, you know what I mean? They were like these kind of normal-looking kids, but all of a sudden they're busting out a window or freaking fucking off of a cop, you know, and you're just like, well, Jesus Christ, man, fuck.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the thing, is that, you know, I always said I'm too musically diverse to look like a stereotypical street. I did, but, you know, mohawks are a pain in the ass to maintain. And
hell yeah, it's too much time out of your day.
So when did Secret Servicemen start, and was it always with the aims of being political? Because you referenced not just Trump, but Obama and a lot of other issues, despite, you know, obviously what's going on now, it's relevant. But, like, was there always a political agenda with what you wanted to do, and does that reflect on your time in the military by any chance?
Well, we started off, it's been about a year, actually, that we've been together. The motivation was, yeah, pretty much always political. It was one of the things that got us into forming the band. And, absolutely, we don't just hit Trump. We hit all sorts of other things as well.
Yeah, you hit Obama just as hard, you know.
For sure, yeah, for sure. You know, it's just because, you know, I can find problems in just about any politician. You know, just like most people, they're not to be trusted. They should be questioned. Our job as Americans is to, you know, constantly ask why, say no, I don't want to do that. That's, you know, that's our right.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, left or right or anything like that. It's just politics in general are stupid, you know, and the way the country's run right now is, you know, particularly now is really not favorable, but, you know, you can find fault with any of these presidents in the past, you know, even the ones that everyone said, oh, they're so great, you can find something. And, you know, the political bent for us is just basically trying to point out all the problems that we see politically. We don't really take sides because, you know, we don't really believe in the sides.
Yeah, you know, I understand completely.
So
yeah, I agree with you, too.
You know, the time in the military, it didn't, you know, I can't say that it really did affect me, even though I was stationed in D.C., and I was surrounded by the politics and the pomp and circumstance of that whole thing.
Yeah.
But did that really motivate me politically? Not really. You know, I think I was probably a little bit less political back then. And being in the Army, you know, it's kind of one of those things that as a soldier, you just don't think about politics anymore. It's just kind of like, yeah, you know, here I am doing this job, and I know I'm a number on a piece of paper somewhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just one of those realities. But, you know, the politics of the whole thing didn't really affect me as much as it might have affected some other people.
Yeah, naturally. I mean, I've been told, you know, I've met Vietnam vets who've told me, like, that they feel like criminals themselves for having to do what they did.
Right, right.
Like, I've never met any soldier who's ever been like, yeah, I loved war. It's never that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that doesn't really exist out there. And the ones that do say that, you're kind of like, huh, well, I'm going to keep you at arm's distance then.
Yeah, how about you go back? And it's sad.
So your job is there.
Yeah. It's sad because, like, you know, even just watching Full Metal Jacket, you can learn a lot about that, you know.
Oh, for sure, man. Absolutely.
And, you know. What was it like opening up for the Addicts? You seemed really pumped about that, and obviously I had never heard of you before that night, but you blew me away as well.
Thanks. Thank you very much. Dude, it was one of those, like, once-in-a-lifetime feelings that you're just like, holy shit.
Pinch me, am I dreaming?
This, but we're on stage with these guys who have been doing it for 40 years. You know what I mean?
And so, they've got the original lineup still, too. That's admirable.
Yeah, for sure, man. For sure, yeah, so I was totally pumped. Yeah, and the rest of the band was, too. You know, most of the guys had never heard of them before. You know, I've been listening to the Addicts for a long time, so for them it was a surprise, but they were totally stoked at it. You know, meeting the band was really cool. They were all really, really nice guys. It was completely just all around a great time, great situation. I loved it.
Yeah, like, they blew my mind. Like, I had known of them, obviously, as well. And they're kind of one of those bands that didn't get famous, so maybe that's why they're still around. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But, like, you guys had the same...
Torn apart by fame.
Oh, yeah. But you guys seemed to... Like, the thing I liked about you guys is how you just said those blunt things in the right way that you're supposed to do in the humor side of it. Like, it's clear you have a serious message, but you're absolutely ripping him to shreds using humor. It's the Jello Biafra that, you know, I know I'm not the only one who mentioned that to you.
Right, for sure. Yeah, he is. He's definitely the catalyst for the way that, you know, I act and speak on stage. He is definitely the number one influence to that. And that's one of the things I always loved about him, is this blunt, sardonic punk humor that's just like, yeah, you know, this is some serious shit, but I'm going to point it out in a way that's going to make you laugh and also pay attention.
Yeah,
know?
Exactly. I mean, I loved how the Dead Kennedys had that surf vibe to them, too.
Right, right.
Like, you know, that made them unique. That made them really unique.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Absolutely.
And you guys put in a little bit of Miser Lou. I forget which song that was, but when I heard that, I was like, oh my God, this is great!
Yeah, that's Jet Ski Patrol. That's,
oh, yeah.
That's about one of Trump's fun little things that he did. That's actually a division of the Secret Service now, that they just ride around with him when he's on his yacht offshore somewhere, and they fling around on jet skis and make sure that there's no terrorists out there ready to get him, you know.
Oh, my God. When you reach that point where you have to have that kind of protection, you have to ask yourself, am I doing the right thing?
For sure, man. And is he? No, absolutely not. He's not. Because we're ones paying for that shit. That's the crazy part.
Yeah. It's literally like punching yourself in the nuts.
Twice.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So, you guys are recording an album, EP. You mentioned everybody was around, and I had a Guinness given to me by someone who just didn't want to hold it by that point. But what's in the works for the album or the EP, whatever you're working on?
Yeah, it's going to be an EP. I think we're fixing to put, like, how many songs are going to be on that EP, Todd? Yeah, we're not really sure about how many we're doing. We're thinking 4 to 6, something
yeah.
like that. And, you know, we're doing it all by ourselves. Todd's got editing programs and all that stuff. So, you know, we're going to just do everything DIY.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, print off a couple of CDs and put some stuff online. So we're hopefully going to have that done within the next couple of months, you know.
Awesome. You have to keep me in the loop for that, because I will for sure be willing to review that immediately.
Awesome.
Yeah,
we just found out about another show that we're going to be probably doing with The Haunt, too. Mephiscopheles and the Villains are going to be coming around in April.
Oh, nice.
And we got an email from their promoter saying, hey, you guys want to open up for these guys? And we're like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Whatever.
You know? I mean, that's what's admirable about you guys, is that, like, this is such a niche or underground genre. But, like, bands like you, like, having obvious influences, like I said, you sounded like, when you first started playing the first couple notes of your first song, I'm like, they sound like Millions of Dead Cops. And, like,
that's a great comparison. I'll definitely take that.
Well, I mean, as you know, I got engaged at the show. I showed my fiance the MDC song Patriot Asshole, and I'm like, don't these guys sound like them? Within the first 10 seconds, she's like, yep, I can hear it. You know, so, but to have, like, you know, your own unique spin on it, I'm imagining it gets harder to do that as time goes on, you know?
Yeah, for sure. You know, keeping things fresh is difficult, and that's one of the things about some of our songs. You know, they're so topical at the point of us writing them. As things develop, you know, during the course of this administration, I've actually, you know, changed some of the lyrics of some of the songs, just doing them live, you know, just kind of ad-libbing things,
yeah,
just to keep them relevant and topical for the time,
yeah.
You know, because the one that we do, it's criminal collusion. It's all about, you know, the initial Trump collusion with Russia thing.
Yeah.
So I've gone on to change that into the Ukraine stuff, and now the impeachment gets mentioned and stuff like
yeah.
that. So, you know, so you got to roll with what's going on.
So you almost ad lib it, but, like, it's almost like you're taking a news diatribe or whatever is going on and interjecting it to fit whatever's going on at the time. It's
yep,
like something you keep adding to, which I think is brilliant, because you realize that's never going to be the same way live again.
Right.
That's what's really cool about that, too. And being able
awesome.
To do that, man, much kudos to you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I mean, but I get it. I mean, I'm a musician myself, too, and I'm working on finishing up a solo record, or a solo EP, that, like, I take influence from everywhere, and I'm trying to put it all together. So it's somewhere between, like, Iron Maiden and the Misfits and shit. But, like, the thing that I noticed is that everybody that I hung out with 10 years ago in the Philly punk scene have all splintered off, but they're all amazingly artistic, and all their stuff's unique, and they're not doing anything close to what they were doing 10 years ago. Which, as a band, you have to progress, and you naturally get, you know, they say you learn how to play your instruments. But, like, you guys did, like, a little bit of, like, that surf part and, you know, Jet Ski Patrol. Mm-hmm. And, like, I do hear a lot of other isms. Are you gonna, do you have any plans to expand a little bit, or are you just gonna try to keep it an unconscious thing where, like, you just do what you do? Like,
yeah, I think that's pretty much, you know, the way that we've approached everything now, and I can't see that changing because it works so well for us. You know, we'll read or hear about something, and then, you know, just kind of apply that idea to a song, and then just let it come out the way it comes out. You know, that's definitely the way we write stuff, and it works for us. You know, it's kind of fluid.
Yeah. Now, do you write the lyrics?
We don't ever want to get stale. You know, that's our big thing.
Want
to get stale.
You don't want to repeat the same thing, but you want to do something that still sounds like you.
Got it. Exactly.
Now, do you write the lyrics, or, like, is it a band effort with songs? Does someone come up with a riff?
The drummer and I are pretty much the lyric writers in the band. You know, Aaron and Robert do, you know, contribute ideas here and there, but it's primarily Todd and myself that come up with the lyrics.
That's cool. And they come up with the music parts, I'd imagine, then.
Yeah, Todd, Aaron, and Robert will sit down in the basement and just, you know, start playing something, and that's a lot of how our songs develop is just by, oh, here's this riff, let's play something, and it just goes, and then they start adding different ones, and next thing you know, we got a song.
It's crazy. And some people say, I wish it could be that easy, and it's like, well, it is, you know, you throw something at the wall and see if it sticks. It's like a chemistry experiment, you know what I mean?
Perfect, yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, and it's cool to, as a writer, to have a writing partner. That's something I haven't experienced in a couple of years, actually. But, I mean, is it sometimes just one line's yours, or do you just fill in each other's blanks, or does it just...
No, it's usually an entire song that we'll write. You know, sometimes, you know, Todd and I, you know, when, like, for example, when he writes something, you know, I'll start doing it, and, you know, invariably I'm changing up some of the patterns that he's written and what he had in his head.
Yeah.
But he always looks at me, he's like, you know what, that fucking works, man, just let's go with that. Every once in a while, you know, I'll change a word or a line just to fit with something, but yeah, usually it's, you know, one of us writing an entire song.
That's really cool. Like, and to have the ideas to bounce off of, and you being a singer and him being a drummer, he's hearing it differently than what you're hearing, or, you know what I mean?
Exactly, yeah.
It's funny how things sometimes happen by accident, and I found that out, because when I started actually working on my solo record, I really learned a lot about how the performance in the studio is a completely different animal in its own, and I'm sure you guys are learning that too.
Yeah.
But, like, it's just one of those things that, like, with my record, and I'm not trying to, like, boast myself, but hearing it come from nothing because I did most of the guitars and wrote it all, you know what I mean? I can't play drums, so I, you know, had someone else do that. But, like, hearing it all come together, but then also having those moments where, like, oh, this would sound really cool, and not even thinking about it, I'd start playing something, and it would just work so perfectly, like, it was meant to happen, but getting inspired from your own stuff, in a way, to add something to it, I've always found very fun.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Like, I can't imagine doing it by myself.
It was just me and my friend, who's, I've known since fifth grade, and she's a producer, and she lives down in Pennsylvania. She's got her own office in her house, which is basically a DIY recording studio. So, yeah, can you imagine trying to play your own stuff to a fucking click track because you don't have drums recorded yet?
No.
That was a pain in the ass. I had to get rid of that. I couldn't do it. Like, I'm not trained at all musically. I'm very raw. I don't know how to play scales, but I can shred. You know, it's one of those things where I know my limitations and I know my abilities, but I could not get the click track.
Yeah, right. Yeah, forget that, man.
I'm too punk rock for this. What are some of the bands that, like, maybe aren't around or that are kind of, like, in the local area that you've played with that you've liked?
Oh, man, we've actually had a great opportunity to play with a bunch of local stuff. Two of my favorite ones right off the top of my head are Teen Cat. Teen Cat's awesome. They label themselves as pop punk, P-A-W-P. And all their stuff is themed around video games and anime and stuff like that. And, you know, they really bring it. They're freaking awesome. And they're very original. You know, their drummer plays an electric drum kit and stuff. So it's like an atypical sound.
Oh, that's so awesome.
And then another one is Joyous Shrub. Joyous Shrub is amazing. Very raw, you know, hardcore punk sound. They remind me a lot of, like, Wasted Youth and stuff like that.
Oh, nice.
And they're a bunch of young kids, too, man. I think the oldest one's probably, like, 25 or 26. So
nice.
They're just really nice, hype, and they bring it. So it's pretty awesome.
It's weird because I don't think of myself as 28 years old because all the stuff that, you know, just the way I am as a person, I feel like I'm much older. You know, so when someone says, like, oh, yeah, they're young, they're only 26, I'm like, well, yeah, they're about my age. Wait, I'm that? You know?
Yeah, shit, man, I'm looking at 50 years old this year, you know, and this stuff, you know, it just makes me feel like I'm still 18 to 22 years old.
You know, that's the one thing I found, because that show I saw you guys at, that was my first punk show in 10 years, really, like a real local underground kind of small venue punk show. I hadn't seen one in 10 years, and I was just like, it was like, yeah, it made me feel like a teenager again. You know, I've got two kids, I'm raising a 6-year-old girl and a 6-month-old girl, you know, and they didn't age you quickly, but,
oh yeah,
you know, it was like, wow, man, like, this is me. I forgot who I was for a while there, you know, like,
that's the great thing about it, man. It's always there. You know what I mean? For the longest time, especially after I got out of the service, you know, when I went back to Syracuse, there really wasn't a punk scene there to be spoken of. It was there, but it wasn't big. It wasn't, you know, as prolific as things were in D.C., like I remembered. But when I, you know, started getting back into it and realized that, holy shit, it still exists, you know, going to
it's
New York
just
City,
underground
and stuff you see, and you're like, holy shit, it's still here, you know, so
yeah.
It's always there, which is a great thing.
Yeah, and, like, I've always said, like, you know, people who say, like, punk is dead or punk died with this band, punk died with that band, it won't really die as long as there's still corrupt politicians and angry teenagers out there in their room going, fuck you, mom, you know.
You got it, man, absolutely.
I mean... You know, and there's so much, like, 50s rock and roll and punk, which really, you know, that was the original rebellion. Up until then, kids listened to what their parents listened to, wore what their parents wore, followed their parents into the same job. It's like, you know, no wonder they called it the devil's music.
For that, you know?
Yeah.
We got a generation of angry kids.
Yeah. But, like, you know, you look back and it's, like, hard to believe, like, Elvis Presley was censored and thought to be outrageous, and it's like,
right.
What? But
Elvis, why, you can't let our daughters look at that man moving his pelvis that way. What is wrong with you people, you know?
Yeah.
It was such funny shit, and it seems so mundane now, you know, compared to what, you know, we've experienced as people in this country. But, you know, for them, that was, like, this big, huge fucking thing. Like, oh, my God, this is horrible. It's the music of Satan.
You know, the only other music before that was jazz that they did that to. But that pretty much died off with the Great Depression, unfortunately.
Right.
And but then you had blues, which obviously, you know, that was not accepted everywhere like it is now.
No, absolutely, yeah. You know, oh God, we have black men playing and lamenting. What are we gonna do now?
how dare they have the same feelings and rights as us? How dare they? You know,
unacceptable.
Yeah, we need to build a wall. Like, the one thing I read recently, and I'm wondering if it's something that you've already looked at as a topic, is Trump rolling back definitions on what is and what isn't domestic violence to literally domestic violence, like literal violence.
Yeah.
It's yeah, rolling things back about 30 or 40 years.
Yeah, right.
Like,
yeah, for sure, man. His agenda seems to be just make everything like it was back in the 50s and 60s, you know?
Yeah.
Just everything's really, you know, closed up, and he wants this policy of isolation, and, you know, we've seen what happens when we isolate ourselves from the rest of the world. We have horrible fucking things happen, you know? And it seems like he just wants to reshape the country in his image and just close the doors and leave us in this weird perpetual semi-fascist police state. You know, and it's
like the second coming of the Dark Ages.
Yeah,
in a way. I mean, some of his regulations are rolling back to the 70s, which is ironic because I said from day one that Trump just reminded me of a really stupid Richard Nixon. And that's not a compliment either. You know, he's creating this very mafioso, paranoid kind of atmosphere that Nixon did, and a lot of the ways that, you know, the whole "I love the uneducated" was his version of the silent majority speech.
Yeah.
You know, his slogan is stolen from Reagan. Like, you know, and some people revere these presidents. I'm like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, seriously.
Oh, but the Democrats, I'm not talking about Democrats. They're a problem too, but let's stick to the issue at hand here.
Right.
The whole deflection on both sides of the parties is, I think, what bothers me. Because one side will blindly lick someone else's boots while the other side does the same. And they're both, like, throwing shit at each other while, like, oh my god, he threw shit at us! You know what I mean? That's literally what the political landscape looks like in America right now.
Absolutely. You know, it's you know, nobody wants to meet in the middle anymore. And, I mean, that's been the point of this, the whole life of this country. It's been about have your own ideas, have your opinions, but at the end of the day, you have to come to a solution that's going to benefit the people here. And we're not seeing that right now from either side, you know, because we're dealing with a bunch of people who go to work every day, make this huge paycheck, and don't really think about their constituents and the people that support them and what they're supposed to be doing, which is serving us as the people of the United States. And we have to sit in the middle and listen to their bullshit stories and become more and more polarized to the side and hate each other even more. And that's another big problem, too, is this polarization is it's splitting us apart as a country, as a people. And,
absolutely.
You know,
I've seen families torn apart.
This level of stupid shit.
Me neither. I've literally seen family members disown other family members over a difference in political opinion.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
It's insanity. They stopped being decent a long time ago. Like, I just, based on your character, and I don't, you know, I'm an understanding person. I can tolerate a lot. But if all you're going to throw is a bunch of shit at me, I'm not going to bother, you know?
Yeah, I'm not going to sit there and let you hit me with it. That's for sure.
Yeah, you know, and there's so much dumb shit. Like, you know, I live in New York. Well, you live in New York State with me, so you understand that, too.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, Emperor Cuomo needs a fifth vacation home. You know? Like, you know, and I'm not trying to get, like, overly political, but the only party that I would even have worthy of my votes, the Libertarian Party, because they are somewhere between both sides of the bullshit, and their ultimate goal is a voluntary society.
Yep, absolutely. Yep, I definitely lean toward that as well. I've got a lot of friends that are libertarians, and, you know, when I talk to them, I understand what they're saying, where they're coming from, and they're all disgusted with this whole thing, too, you know, so it does give us hope as far as that's concerned.
And that's not to say it's a perfect party, but out of all of our choices, that's the one that really has our best interests most at heart,
mm-hmm.
that I've found.
I agree.
I voted for Larry Sharp for governor last election.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Nice. He didn't win, but we're on the ballot next to Republicans and Democrats, so people will actually be able to see us, be like, oh, what's that?
Yep,
you know,
exactly.
We got 1.1% less than the Green Party, if I recall.
Wow.
Yeah, so not too bad, but
no,
still a ways to go.
Unfortunately, while we're still mired in a two-party system, you know, it's going to be really difficult to imagine anybody from an independent party getting any kind of recognition or any kind of election, quite honestly, you know.
The funny thing that I tell people, too, is because I do this and I've been doing this for, like, a little over a decade now, I've met a lot of bands and people in a lot of different countries. Some I had never heard of, like in Eastern Europe, like Belarusia and Georgia, which is a small country right underneath Russia. You know, and even in England, they don't understand our political system because our two parties make up one entire political party that they're able to vote for over in England.
Yep, right.
We are pretty... our political parties are the conservative parties in England, or the conservative party.
Right.
That's what makes me laugh, because nobody understands the, when you think of it on that level, it should have a lot of red flags immediately going off in your brain.
Absolutely.
You know
Absolutely.
What I mean?
And I found the same thing, too. I was talking to people from other countries. They just do not get our politics at all. They don't understand it. And I like to tell them pretty much the same thing. It's like, I don't get it either.
Yeah.
I wish I could help you.
Like, so many people I know, literally, any Trump supporters I know that I talk to on a regular basis only voted for Trump because he wasn't Hillary.
Yeah,
and I've met a lot of people on the other side who say the same thing in reverse. And I'm just like, do you realize that you didn't have a choice?
Yeah, exactly. You've got two choices, both bad.
I have always, and I'm not saying this just because the Witcher TV shows become popular, but I've always said I refuse to choose between the greater and lesser of two evils because I don't want to choose evil. I've always felt that way since I was young. It didn't make sense to do it any other way.
Yep. I agree. Yeah, shit, man. For the primary, I voted for Bernie Sanders, you know. And I
voted
was
Gary
pretty
Johnson.
Damn sure he was going to get that nod. And when it didn't happen and the DNC passed him over because they thought Hillary was the better choice, not we, but they thought Hillary was the better choice, I was instantly like, you know what? We're going to fucking lose to this chump now. And I was, unfortunately, I was fucking right. I held out hope, and I thought, hey, you know, Clinton might be able to pull this out, but in the back of my head, I never quite believed that was the case. So when I woke up at 3:30 that morning and saw fucking Pence standing there waving and confetti flying around, I was like, oh, God damn it, we
and
lost.
The thing is, if Trump gets impeached, Pence will take over, and Pence is worse.
Yeah, I agree, man.
He's
fucking frightening.
And people can think what they want because, like, you know, obviously you're a punk band with a political message, so the politics part is necessary to understand, but I'm not left side or right side, and I'm going to reiterate that again, but anybody who tries to use gay conversion therapy to, like, shock or electroshock the gay out of you is a horrible human being.
Yes, indeed.
He's no better than, like, Dr. Frankenstein, but Dr. Frankenstein didn't actually kill anybody to get that shit. He robbed graves.
Yep.
You see what I mean?
Yeah, right.
You're literally more evil than Dr. Frankenstein.
Congratulations, Mr. Pence, you win.
Trump goes, oh, he's the best. He's the greatest Dr. Frankenstein. I know, believe me.
He's my Baron Victor.
Oh, my heart. No, like, the thing is that, like, you know, and there's been some, I mean, not much, but I know Trump passed something where streaming sites have to actually pay something to artists or something like that. Like, he actually did something good for the music business, but that's, like, one tiny little nugget, and I'll...
Yeah, for sure. The other thing is that, you know, he's taking credit for the fact that animal abuse is now a federal crime, which, you know, that's great. That's another small little blip of something that happened during his administration that I can say, yeah, that's fucking cool. But do we really think that he had anything personally to do with that? I freaking doubt it.
Absolutely not. And, you know, that, so animal abuse is now a felony, okay, but dropping bombs?
China.
He's such a humanitarian. He cares about animals.
He's a great guy.
I don't understand how it became this. Where do we go wrong? Like, that's the problem, is there's so much red tape and so much shit that you can't ever pinpoint the direct time when this shit started.
Yep, yep. And I wish, you know, and the other thing, too, is that, you know, we've lost what it truly is to be American, and the fact that we just listen to what we're told through media, through politics. People just hear something and they're like, all right, you know what, I agree with that, I'm good, I'm not going to think anymore about it, that's it, I'm going to leave that to somebody else. And that's where you really start to fail. And as people in this country, we've totally started going that way. And it's really obvious now with the polarization of parties that, you know, people are just willing to basically lay down, do what they're told, and just let it be with that. And that's fucking frightening, and it's dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, I sometimes feel that way mainly because, like, I'm only one person, and there's only so many of us, you know, and it's one of those things where I don't want to be lackadaisical about anything when it comes to this, but I just have to sit and wait.
Yep, that you know? Is true.
I, they can never stop me from thinking, and ever since I was young, I've always questioned everything. I've never, you know, I would sit there and ask questions that you're not supposed to, and it gave me a lot of trouble in school.
Right.
You know, because, you know, things just don't make sense to me. You know.
And that's where it all begins, man, quite honestly, is having that thought in your head of, you know what, I don't understand this, why? Or, that sounds fucked up, why did that happen, who did this, you know, and people don't like to hear that shit. It scares them because it's making them face reality, and for some reason, you know, that just leads to, you know, angry people that are just as adamant about not wanting to hear it, you know, and it's frightening. Like I said, it's frightening and dangerous, and that's one of the big problems that I have with this country right now.
Yeah. The other problem I have is the music industry is reverting back to almost a pre-Beatles territory.
Oh, God, it's so bad. I can't, I mean, I don't even understand popular music. I try to listen to it, I'm just like, this is like tripe, you know, it's just...
And they're doing all these... Garbage. And even like, you know, heavy metal, the mainstream metal radio is some of the worst garbage out there because... Not only is it, you know, subpar music, but it's literally, heavy metal is now clean and polished, and instead of, like, you know, the rebel and looking wild, you're now able to look like the guy that you'd see buying a crack pipe next to Tesco's, you know, it's like, what?
The record industry has a way of making everything mundane and banal, and it's just, it's fucking, it's gross, you know, I mean, I haven't listened to radio music, and I can't even tell you how long, it's probably since I was a teenager, quite honestly, you know, and every time I do have to listen to the radio for some reason or other, I'm like, oh, God, can we put on a CD or something, this is just fucking horrible, you know?
It makes you want to die.
It does, it kills me a little bit inside every time I hear it.
I feel like I lose VR, brain cells. You know? I really feel like I lose brain cells.
You are totally losing brain cells when you hear that shit.
Like,
slowly killing them.
You know, and it's funny you mentioned everything, like, involved in that. The last good movement that we've had was the 90s grunge and alternative thing. We haven't really had anything that's really been anything worth a shit since.
Yeah,
to shake things up.
It's true.
I mean, every metal band
here and there, but nothing like that kind of a movement, you know. I agree. I actually really liked a lot of the, you know, the Seattle sound and the grunge stuff, and, you know, even the things that got lumped into it, like Alice in Chains is one of my favorite bands. I love Alice in Chains. And, you know, they weren't even from Seattle, man. They were from fucking California, but everybody put them into that same category. You know
yeah.
what I mean? And,
well, some of the members were from California, but they relocated to Seattle. They were equally.
Oh,
they were originally a hair band.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they were influenced both by the hair metal stuff in the 80s metal stuff, and they were really influenced by what was going on in Seattle at the time, so they kind of merged the two in a unique sound. When it comes to grunge, I'm more on the punkier side with the Mudhoneys and, you know...
Oh, nice, yeah.
You know, I like the fastbacks and the hardcore bands, too, like the underground bands. I have Sub Pop 200 and the Hype soundtrack on CD, which I paid a very pretty penny for, but they're so worth it. Bands like Dead Moon and shit that nobody's ever heard of, that's fucking brilliant, you know?
Right.
There was so much in that, but it was... And it brought punk back into attention, because obviously it was just punk played slow.
You got it. Most of those guys were old punkers that were just like, hey, I'm going to keep playing music, I'm going to do something different. And then thus grunge was born.
Yeah. But it was like, you know, and just like anything else, the media ruined it.
Yeah.
One genre I've gotten into that doesn't seem to have any media availability is the stoner and the doom metal side of things. That's where the
stoner metal.
Yeah. Like, it's one of those things where, like, they take, like, the early 70s style of playing and completely twist it into their own thing. And each band doesn't sound the same, but, like, you're playing 20-minute songs with a one riff that's, like, tuned to B-flat. With a bong bubbling in the vocal booth. Like, you're not gonna get that played on any radio or anything. But that's what's brilliant about it, because it's something that can't be taken from us.
Yep, for sure.
You know?
Yeah, speaking of that horrible loss this week of Reed Mullen from Crush.
Oh, yeah.
SNOA.
They are definitely, if you don't know stoner metal, but you know COC, you know stoner metal by proxy, because they are pretty much, they were. And yeah, when I saw that, I was shocked. He was only like 53, dude. I'm not sure exactly.
Sucks.
I'm not sure what he passed away from or if they know yet, but either way, it's horrible.
I don't think they've released it yet. I hope it's nothing bad. You know, honestly, I hope it was something more to do with just some kind of an illness or something. But, you know, it didn't seem like he was too deep into the shit. I think that was definitely more of a Mike Dean, the bass player's deal. He had a lot of problems with alcohol and drugs here and there. But, yeah, you never really heard anything about Reed. So I'm hoping it was... something that was natural and not brought on, you know?
Yeah, and I hope that he didn't have to really suffer. I mean, that shocked me. What the fuck, yep. You know? You know,
totally
losing Lemmy and Scott Weiland, and we've lost a lot of legendary greats that started it all, and I don't know if I feel safe in a world without these guys, though, to be honest with you. Like, Lemmy's gone, Ozzy's not going to last too much longer, and that scares me, too. It doesn't surprise me. I mean, Glenn Tipton from Judas Priest got diagnosed with Parkinson's, and I recently saw them, and they're still fucking amazing.
Still killing it, yeah.
Yeah, even without KK and Glenn as their legendary guitar duo, Richie does a phenomenal job, but KK's someone that I would rather have there. Given what's been going on recently with that, I don't know if you follow them, but I gotta say... those guys are, like, in their late 60s, early 70s, and they're still fucking, you know, it's
yeah,
still...
Yeah, they kill it, dude. I love Priest. I've always gotten into their stuff, too, because they always had a huge edge to them as well, you know, that I always found appealing, you know, the...
And then they weren't into punk, though, but they had that edge to them that nobody else had at the time. They were also the first, like, real screaming metal band, if you think about it, because they started way back in, like, 74,
right.
You know.
And their origins, too, is funny when you go back and listen that far back to their stuff, you're like, oh, so there was a lot of development before they became this heavy metal juggernaut that they became.
Yeah,
you know,
Rock and
like
Roll is actually one of my favorite records. Rock and Roll is one of my favorite records because it's so different. I like that kind of style of playing, but I think there's some really good songs on there, too.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely.
And, like, they always had... They always felt heavy metal had no rules, so if they wanted to try to do a poppier album like they did with Turbo, I love that album, and I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah, no, I thought Turbo was great, man. And that title track, Turbo Lover, fucking great song.
They still play
song.
It to this day.
Keyboards in it and shit, you know?
Yeah, well, it was guitar synth, so it really technically, I mean, that still took more talent than hitting a button. Especially
yeah,
how volatile they were back then.
Yeah, right.
You know, But, like, their early 70s stuff, you just listen to the progression from Rockarola to the end with Hellbent for Leather and Unleashed. It's like, wow. And then where they went from there to Painkiller, it's like, wow. Painkiller, I love, but, like, I really like their, like, I like them better when they were more the traditional, when they didn't try to go thrash. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And I think for them, you know, I think that was one of their progressions where, especially, I'm thinking Rob, especially, was kind of like, you know.
He kind of blew his voice out on that tour.
Yeah.
I mean, I've read where, like, that's kind of where he blew his voice out on that tour. And I don't blame him. I mean.
I know.
But they still play Painkiller, too, and he still fucking belts it out.
Like, man's a machine.
The metal god does not rust. I think it's also kind of punk as fuck that he's been a gay man, and he was a gay man, and, like, the whole heavy metal leather and studs macho look actually was a gay leather daddy look. I think that's kind of awesome and more metal than anything you can even try.
Oh, fuck yeah, dude. I mean, I remember, you know, a lot of my friends, you know, because we're talking about the, you know, the late 80s when he finally did come out and people started figuring out.
He didn't actually come out till like 96, but there were always rumors going on.
Yeah, and I think it started, you know, in that little 80s era where, you know, and I was one of the first ones that I knew to kind of bring that up. I'm like, did you guys realize that he kind of dresses like, you know, one of those leather dudes from San Francisco, right? And everyone's like, oh, no, what are you talking about? Fuck that, no, I'm fucking Judas Priest. I'm
yeah.
Like, look, there's nothing wrong with fucking being gay and being heavy, dude. It's something that can definitely fucking happen. In fact, I challenge some of you guys to go to fucking San Francisco and call one of them a fag and see what fucking happens.
Yeah, exactly. But no, like, I just think that that's so cool because heavy metal's supposed to be this macho thing. And
right.
It totally kind of throws it on its side for, like, the best singer in the genre to ever exist. You know? Like, that to me is... Yeah.
It ruined my life.
Some people... I've honestly met... Like, I grew up in a small town outside of Pennsylvania. Or outside of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I remember the one next door neighbor I had. They were legit hillbillies. Like, legit. They weren't even rednecks. They were just straight up hillbillies. And I remember talking to the guy about music. He's like, yeah, I love Iron Maiden. And I'm like, yeah, Judas Priest. He's like, oh, no, I like Judas Priest till I found out Rob Halford was a queer. And I hate queers. I was like, what?
Shit.
I'm like, my dad's a right-wing NRA-carrying Republican, and that's his favorite band. What's your issue? So, like, even then, I mean, my mom was a California hippie back in the day, so she pretty much raised me, so I'm like, you know, what the fuck? I've never understood that way of thought, you know?
Right, yeah.
It's not even being raised by a hippie, it's called being a decent person, and when that's politicized, you know you're in trouble.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because my upbringing was pretty standard white bread America. You know, I did not grow up with racism or, you know, having any exclusionary thoughts.
Yeah.
But, you know, my father was, you know, he was a freaking kind of a rednecky urban cowboy type of guy. You know, he spent a lot of time in the military. He loved guns and all that shit. But, you know, never once did I ever hear him use a racial slur. Never heard him call anybody a faggot or a queer or any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, it was one of those things where I don't know where, I don't know how I came out as good as I did, but I somehow got lucky. And, you know, even though I wasn't, you know, exposed to horrible ideas and thoughts about other people, I didn't develop them for any reason. And, you know, my mother was a very religious woman, still is. You know, I've definitely never been into that, you know. So I don't know how I avoided these things and turned out the way I did, but I feel pretty lucky about it, you know.
I've been told by my cousin that he's surprised that I don't have as many problems as I do because of who my parents are and everything that happened to me growing up and everything. So, I mean, I definitely get that where you're like, I'm not sure how I turned out okay. I mean, there's a lot of people who were, when I came back to visit one time, they were so overjoyed that I didn't end up in prison. I'm like, gee, thanks. You know, like, thanks for having such, you know, good thoughts about me. But it wasn't, like, anything like that. They just knew that my situation in my life. But I got turned off to religion big time because I wasn't brought up in a religious household either. Like, my parents weren't really religious by any means. But I was in foster care for quite a few years. And both my foster parents were fundamentalist, hypocritical, gaslighting, I'm not sure, manipulative, there we go, foster parents who just, I like Kiss and Motley Crue, and they were devil worshippers. They were stuck in the 80s satanic panic way of thinking. Do you understand what I mean?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I wore my Ramones t-shirt, you know, with the presidential seal, the nothing. You shouldn't have worn that. That's satanic. What? It's not for God, so it's against God. I was like, so the songs you sing to your 5-year-old granddaughter, the nursery rhymes that don't involve God, those are satanic too? Oh, you think you know everything. What? I wasn't trying to be disrespectful. I was like, what exactly is satanic about my shirt?
Yeah, right. Seriously, nothing.
I worked at Hot Topic, and I had to have friends drive me to work because they refused to take me to the mall to even drop me off at work because I worked where I did. They said they could see demons crawling on Hot Topic's walls. I really want to know what the hell they were on.
Oh, God. No, they're high on Jesus.
Funny thing is, I ended up kind of looking like that person.
Hey, that's a choice, man. That's Hey, buddy, I hate to cut you short, but I do have I got an appointment coming in at 2, and he just got here, so I do have to go do some tattoo work.
Oh, nice.
If you want to, though, you know, we could pick this up at a later time.
Oh, yeah, we could definitely put this out in 2 parts, for sure. I mean,
cool, man.
This has been fun, and this is how I do interviews, so.
Yeah, I love it, man. This is great.
Yeah, we're just shooting the shit, you know? That's what you do. I don't see any reason to be pretentious and have, like, a list of questions. Real quick, though, if you don't mind me asking, what do you love about music?
What do I love about music?
Yeah.
I love the fact that it's a great way to express yourself as an artist, but also as a fan, it's just a way for you to relate to something that appeals to you and be part of something, especially with punk rock and metal and things like that. You're part of the scene, a whole movement of people who think pretty much the same way, and it's great that nobody thinks exactly the same way, but it brings people together that have like-minded thoughts and views and allows them to have fun and express themselves in a way that normally they wouldn't be able to, and I think that's the most beautiful thing about music.
Yeah. I definitely would agree with that. In a very secure and safe environment, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man.
Yeah. But all right, man. Get some tattoo work done. We'll definitely be able to pick this up at another point, maybe when your record's getting ready to be out or already out, one of the two.
Cool, man. Absolutely.
That way we can get you going for that. And definitely keep me posted on that. And don't be a stranger, man.
Will do, my friend.
All right, man. Well, take it easy, up the punks, and have a good one.
All right, buddy. Thanks a lot, man.
Later.